Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
In the closing verses of John's third epistle, we find what I have called the value of the written word, the value of the spoken word, and the value of the social word. And the first one we have now covered on the broadcast yesterday and the day before, the value of the written word, indicated by this in verse 13, where John says, "I had many things to write, but I do not wish to write to you with pen and ink." And you recall that John is simply saying that he originally intended to write a longer epistle than he ended up writing. He had that in mind when he first sat down, but upon further reflection, he changed his mind and decided he would confine his epistle to the things that were necessary to be communicated in written form and to be sent immediately, because it was going to be some time, we don't know exactly how much time, but going to be some passing of time before he was able to come and speak to them face to face. And so, though his original intention was to write a lot more, his final product, his final version of what he wrote, was the minimum required. It was the general truth that needed to be immediately communicated to deal with the situation at hand, and which would also be profitable beyond that immediate situation, preserved for all time for the whole all the churches of the Lord Jesus Christ, so that we can study it today and gain profit from what he wrote about Gaius and about Diotrephes and about Demetrius. But the details he reserved for private communication, because a lot of those things were particular to that situation and not to ours, and they would in some ways just satisfy the need for, or the desire for, juicy tidbits of gossip rather than profitable principles of truth. And so what was profitable to be written, he wrote. There is value in the written word. Some things need to be written. Some things need to be written in order to be disseminated down through the centuries, in order to be preserved, in order to be helpful to others. Some things have got to be written down. Other things, however, ought to be spoken personally and privately and go no farther than those personal conversations. That's what John is telling us. So thank you for joining me on this Friday, August 16, as we continue our study of the third epistle of John, and do so because some of you are helping us financially, for which we are very grateful. So we have the value of the written word, but we also have the value of the spoken word. That's the next phrase, "but I hope to see you shortly and we shall speak." I had many things to write. I do not wish to write to you with pen and ink, but I hope to see you shortly and we shall speak face to face. And now we realize that John has a visit planned. It is to take place shortly. Of course, that's one of those elastic terms. Obviously, he intends to come sooner than later, but what that means in this situation, we don't know. But the word shortly literally means soon or immediately. John intended to visit soon, very soon. He should arrive shortly after the visit of Demetrius and the team that he refers to in this epistle. And his purpose for the planned visit is to be able to speak face to face. An idiom in the Greek, it is literally mouth to mouth, which we wouldn't mean quite the same thing to us. When we say mouth to mouth, we think of something like mouth to mouth resuscitation. To the Greeks, that had the idea of speaking personally, speaking face to face. But it's the idea of personal one-on-one conversation. And a letter can't substitute for that sometimes. A personal one-on-one conversation. With whom? And about what? Well, with Gaius, for sure, because he's writing this letter to Gaius, and so these words are directly spoken to him. I had many things to write, but I do not wish to write to you, Gaius, with pen and ink, but I hope to see you, Gaius, shortly, and we shall speak face to face. And what is he going to talk about? Well, undoubtedly, he's going to talk a little bit more about Diotrephes and that situation and how it needs to be dealt with, and no doubt a little bit more about Demetrius that he commends in passing but doesn't say a great deal about. And beyond that, I'm sure John has other things on his mind to talk about the work of the gospel and its progress and maybe questions and concerns that Gaius had, that Gaius had even communicated to John. And John at first thought, I'll write my answers to you in this epistle, but upon further reflection, I think it would be better for me to come and talk to you about them personally, face to face. Again, I mentioned on the broadcast yesterday, Paul employed exactly the same format in 1 Corinthians, even though 1 Corinthians is a long epistle. 3 John is the shortest one in the Bible. 1 Corinthians is one of the longest ones, 16 chapters, and was written, as you know, primarily to answer questions that the Corinthians had sent to him. And Paul does answer a lot of their questions. Every time you read in 1 Corinthians now concerning, he's moved to another subject to address a question which they wrote to him. Now concerning... Well, let's see. Verse 7, he talks about concerning, and I don't remember the exact language, but the whole thing is about marriage. Now concerning, it opens chapter 7 by saying, now concerning the things whereof you wrote to me. So there it's spelled out. We know that he's answering questions that they wrote. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Obviously, they were asking about that in particular. Asking about sexual relationships and marriage and so forth. And he says, I'll answer that question. And chapter 7 is all filled with those answers. Chapter 8 opens by saying, now concerning meat offered to idols. They had written to him to ask questions about that. And that was a big issue in their day. And so he writes to them to answer those questions. In... somewhere along in chapters 10 or 11, he's answering questions that have to do with the Lord's table. And then in chapter 12, he says, now concerning spiritual gifts. They'd written to him about that, and he devotes 3 chapters to that. And then we come to chapter 16, he says, now concerning the collection for the saints. And again, that was something that Paul had initiated, but they apparently had some questions about what exactly he wanted them to do, what the procedure was, and so forth. So he addresses their questions. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so also do you. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay aside, and so forth. And he gives instructions for this project offering because they asked him for some clarifications. And then a little bit later in that chapter, the last chapter of 1 Corinthians, he says, now concerning our beloved brother Apollos. And again, it becomes clear that they had asked him, when is Apollos going to come? We want him to come. He's a very well-received preacher. We enjoyed his ministry. We'd like for him to come again. When's he going to come? And Paul says, now concerning our beloved brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to come with the brethren at this time, but he was not inclined to do so. That's not the exact language. But anyway, he did not want to come at this time. But he will come when he has a more convenient time. Paul is answering their questions throughout that epistle. Now concerning this question, now concerning that question, now concerning the other question. But in the course of all of that, when he deals with the questions about the Lord's table, he says, in effect, I'm writing these things immediately for right now because you need to have them, but the rest I will set in order when I come. And we have no idea what the rest was, and what it was that he set in order when he came. In fact, there are indications throughout the epistle that there were a lot of things that he was going to add to his epistle when he came. So he's going to do exactly the same thing. He's going to write to them what needs to be written, but he's going to reserve certain things for personal communication. And that's what John says. I had many things to write. I wrote the things that needed to be written, but I hope to see you shortly, and we shall speak face to face. And that tells us, therefore, and I'm talking about the value of the spoken word, that tells us that at times there is a need for personal verbal communication. At times there is a need for written communication. At other times there's a need for personal verbal communication. They are different forms of communication. They each have their place. They each have their value. And wise is the person who knows which is what. When you are dealing with a controversial matter, sometimes it's better to communicate personally. One reason why that's so is because when you're talking, you not only communicate the exact words, the language that needs to be spoken, but you are also communicating a tone, an attitude that communicates something beyond the actual language. I have learned over the years that when I write to someone about anything that's the slightest bit controversial, they almost always assume a little bit stronger, a little bit harsher tone to my words than what I intended. But words on a page can seem pretty, well, they can be interpreted anyway. And I mean, it's we know that's true. You read the words of Jesus, and one person will read them, and they imagine that Jesus is speaking in a very soft and soothing tone, and someone else reads exactly the same words, and they imagine that Jesus is speaking in a rather harsh and reprimandatory sort of way. I think I just made up a word. And you can read into the words a tone, an attitude, because that's not communicated in the words on the page. That can only be communicated in verbal communication. Now, the people who heard Christ speak, of course, heard his tone. So they not only heard the words, but they heard his tone. They know. They know whether those words were spoken with a bit of strength of tone, rebuke, or a rebuking tone, or whether they were spoken more mild and more gently. And there are many times, of course, in the words of Christ that we have clues from the passage itself that will tell us how Christ was speaking these words. But sometimes we can't tell, and we will interpret the words according to our own ideas about how Christ was speaking, what tone of voice he was using. And the same thing is true with our communication when we write. And people, as I say, if there's any tension, any controversy involved, they tend to read into the written word a harsher tone than perhaps the person who's writing was actually using. And so sometimes it's a whole lot better to pick up the telephone and talk on the phone, and even better than that, to arrange a meeting and speak face to face. There is great value in the written word, but there's also great value in the spoken word, and we need to know which ought to be utilized when. Until next week, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.